Welcome to another edition of the Gaming Gang Extra. This time around, I'm joined by Darren Johnson, owner of Imperial Outpost Games, located in Glendale, Arizona, straight from the floor of the Volcon 2012 convention. We'll discuss trends in the hobby, as well as the ups and downs of owning a game store. When I arrived at this past weekend's Volcon and saw Darren Johnson was attending as an exhibitor, I knew I wanted to have a chance to sit down with him for an interview, not only to talk about some of the ins and outs of owning a game store, but also to allow him an opportunity to talk about why, in my opinion, his store, Imperial Outpost Games, stands out as the premier gaming store here in the Phoenix Valley. I'm joined by Darren Johnson, owner of Imperial Outpost Games, which is located in Glendale, Arizona. And I wanted to invite Darren to spend a little bit of time discussing what it's like to actually be a game store owner, because I think that would be something that our visitors and our listeners might find fairly interesting. First off, Darren, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very, very much for having me, Jeff, and it's a pleasure to be on here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
If I may ask, how did you get into gaming overall? Not just owning a store, but what were some of the games that really got you interested in the hobby?
My parents always had a lot of games around the house. We were always a game-playing family. Games like Monopoly, Bounce, Haikyuu, Chinese Checkers, Mousetrap, all that. We played those quite a bit as a kid, and I just gained a natural affinity for playing them. I had a cousin who was into a lot of the strategy, military, and then eventually games like D&D, and they brought me into that aspect of the hobby. And from there, it was just a long, slippery slope into darkness.
I was going to say, they brought you over to the dark side. They tempted you over. They're like, Monopoly, huh? You got to play some Avalon Hill.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I've still got my first copy of my first board game I ever bought was Richtofen's War, a World War I board game.
I think almost every gamer who's been around for a few years has a copy of that game. Now, I don't know if it's because Avalon Hill made millions of those, but you can still even go on eBay and probably score a decent condition copy of Richtofen's War, and I've got it too. I mean, it's one of the games I bought back in the day, and you can probably pick it up for about $5.
Yeah, probably. And if I find a few more copies, I probably will. It's like the Dune board game. I'll collect any copy of that one. As a matter of fact, we just got done playing a copy of that last night.
I saw that.
We had six people playing it.
Under your display.
Yeah, we had a great time playing that.
Somebody better not walk away from this booth here while it's out.
It was a wonderful time. It was a wonderful game. But I've always loved games and got into the Dungeons & Dragons and some of the other role-playing games. Came down to Arizona here to go to college and fell in with the gaming crowd there. And from then on, it was just eventually started working at one of the stores. Eventually, I managed one of the stores. And then I decided I could do better and decided to own my own store.
And I will point out, and I've made mention of this both on the show and also on the website, that I find Imperial Outpost the best game store in the Valley, and you have not handed me, wait, what's that $20 bill you're handing me, Darren? Until I found your store, I found the other stores in the Valley a little bit lacking for various different reasons, and I'm not trying to knock them, but they just weren't the kind of places that I would want to hang out at on a regular basis, whereas opposed to Imperial Outpost and the store, which shares some space with you, Mana Works,
yes,
which is all collectible card games, trading card games,
yes,
things like that. As far as getting started with owning the store, you said you had worked at other stores. What was it that finally drove you to decide that you wanted to open up your own gaming emporium?
That's actually a funny story. A Games Workshop paint rack is what convinced me I needed to open up my own store.
Fell in love with the rack?
No. GW had released a new paint rack. And this time I was working for another store in the Valley, which is no longer in business. We had two locations, one in the North Valley, one in the South Valley. And I brought the new rack down to the South Valley store. And I was in the process of setting it up, and the owner came in, and he blew a gasket. Every swear word that he could think of, and I'm sure he made up a few, just cursing them up and down one side and out the other. They're going to take up this much space in my store, and it's just bleeping this and bleeping that. And he went berserk. And I just sat back to myself and I thought, my God, I'm working for a crazy man. I have to get out. I can do this so much better myself. And I got back up to my place, and I started looking at how business plans work and started doing research as to what it takes to open a store, and made a few contacts and did the research and left the employee there, and about a year later started up my own place.
Very nice. I find it interesting that you're the owner of the now defunct stores, and we're not knocking that person or their stores or anything like that. Got upset about a display rack for Games Workshop paints because from what I've seen out here, and of course, regardless if you're a fan of Games Workshop and their pricing systems and things like that, which I'm not. That's why I'm wearing a Reaper Miniatures badge for my, I love Reaper. Love that company.
Good stuff.
Yeah. But I would take a guess that Games Workshop was probably bringing in quite a bit of profit to that store.
Oh, yes. Yes, it very much was. This owner, unfortunately, was living in a paradigm that the gaming industry was still in the 1970s. The gentleman here owned a gaming company that was one of the original publishers of role-playing games alongside Dungeons & Dragons and Traveller. An old Venables company. And he just never came around to times change. And they do. Those who don't adapt die. That's what happened.
And there are some companies out there that still do operate in that late 1970s, early to mid 1980s bubble. And even going to their websites, you see that same sort of mindset and you wonder, wait a second. And some of their products are actually really good in classic games. And they should get some recognition that they deserve, but they don't simply because the person running the show just still is kind of in a time warp.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with older games. I love older games myself. But new games have their place too. And you have to keep current with the current market. Otherwise, you're just going to sink.
Being a game store owner, you probably cannot just focus on your favorite niche of the hobby.
That is one of the quickest ways to go out of business in this. I've seen so many stores run by someone who, I like this game, this game, this game, and that's what we're going to focus on. And it's a recipe for disaster. I carry games that I don't like.
Oh my God, I'm shocked.
But I have to because that's what my customers want to buy. At the end of the day, my job is to make money. That's what it boils down to. I love what I do. I love selling games. But if I can't make money at it, I need to move on. And if it means selling a couple things that I don't like, I will. I'm not going to badmouth the product. I'm not going to give it a glowing review, but I'm not going to badmouth it either. I will try to point people to the stuff that I really do like.
Sure.
But my tastes aren't everyone's tastes. And a lot of store owners will get the whole thing of everyone should play what I like. And it doesn't work that way at all.
Especially if you like something that everybody else is not a big fan of.
Exactly. I know my gaming tastes are eclectic and varied, and sure. I would never want to foist my opinions onto someone else like that. It's just that's bad business.
Welcome to Darren's Advanced Squad Leader store, where all we carry is Advanced Squad Leader products, and most of them are out of print anyway. So what would be the point?
Exactly. Well, that was a good game, too.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'm right with you. I'm just mentioning.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a niche.
Oh, yeah.
War gamers, that's a very niche game.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some stores that carry just Games Workshop, and I've seen those stores either fail or be forced to diversify. Because you cannot rely on just one thing. Even stores that sell just Magic have to diversify. You cannot put all your eggs in one basket.
Seeing that I have not spent many years here in Arizona, do you happen to remember if Phoenix ever had one of the Game Workshop stores here?
Yes, in fact, it actually has had two. One is currently in operation right now.
Okay.
They had one down in the Arizona Mills for a while.
I thought I remember seeing something when I was here previously.
Yep, and now they have one up in the North Scottsdale area that they just recently opened up about 5-6 months ago.
North Scottsdale sounds about right for their price point.
Yes, and I think it's a great idea. I've talked with the owner over there, the manager over there, Luke. Nice bloke. And he's British. I have to call him a bloke.
Of course.
And he actually really is of the idea that he and the local independent retailers have to work together. He gets the guys into the hobby, I take them from there.
Sure.
And if he can continue that relationship, then I'm happy to work with him. Absolutely thrilled to do it.
If I may ask, Darren, what are some of the challenges that you face owning a game store?
Self-motivation. It is tough. It is very, very tough when you don't have anyone to answer to other than, you know, your bank account to get up every morning and do everything. It can be sometimes an almost impossible task sometimes, self-motivating. You know, some people just aren't as good at it as others.
Sure.
It's not one of my strong points. I will completely admit that.
Okay.
But it's something you just have to do sometimes. And if you miss opportunities and you kick yourself in the butt a few times because you didn't self-motivate yourself to do some things. That's one of the biggest challenges. And the other one is separating what I call the business lobe from your gamer lobe. You can't ever forget your gamer lobe because that's why you got into the business in the first place. But you have to also look at it from business point of view. What is good for the store rather than what's good for me? I tell that to my employees. Never make a decision based on what's good for Darren. Make a decision based on what's good for the store. And if I think that they're doing that, I'll back them in anything they decide.
What are some of the wonderful advantages that you have owning a game store?
Sitting in my store at night and listening to five tables of people laughing and having fun.
Playing squad leader, advanced squad leader.
Richthofen's War. No, it really is. I get a kick out of seeing people enjoy themselves and knowing that I had a hand in that. People come into my store and it's the place they relax. It's the place they come to have fun. It's what brightens their week after a long, dreary day of doing whatever it is they're doing. And I get to be a part of that. Oh my God, that's wonderful. I love that. I love people coming in saying, oh, wow, this is out. I've been looking for this. This is great, and you have it. It's awesome. I love that feeling. I love it even better when I can make a sale at the end of that, you know?
Right. Oh, you really want it. Well, yeah, geez, you know, I priced that incorrectly. Let me fix that for you.
Once in a while, you have to wheel and deal, especially with all the internet out there. You have to remain flexible. You have a lot of guys out there that are selling on the internet that literally they're selling out of the back of their car, have no expenses whatsoever, and can afford to price things 5% above cost. So you've got to be competitive there somewhat. The average game store doesn't run a huge profit margin because we have all the overhead expenses. So there's only so much we can take off. We have to make up for that in community and offering a good fun place to play.
And it's interesting that you mention online retailers, and we do have online retailers that we have relationships with the Gaming Gang.
Kudos to you.
Yes. But even those folks also, like yourself, have to concern themselves with a lot of people out there just dropship. And then they turn around and they're selling items for 10 cents more than they paid for, which personally I think would be completely, utterly insane because I can't see much profit in that.
I don't understand that either. The whole idea of we're going to make more through volume. You know, you're going to make more by working a whole ton more to make the same amount that I would make not working as much. It's an idea that's foreign to me.
And I think it would be a little different if we were talking about making 10 cents profit on every Post-it note pack that was being sold as opposed to something that really is a niche hobby.
Yes.
Where many companies, if they sell 10,000 copies of a title, they're ecstatic.
Mm. Oh, exactly. Exactly. We forget in the gaming industry that the gaming industry is still a very, very small cottage industry. It barely ranks as what we would call an industry by industry standards. Hasbro, when they took over Wizards of the Coast, as a matter of fact, they just released something rather interesting. Magic did $200 million in sales, which is 5% overall of all of Hasbro's sales. So all of Magic is 5% of Hasbro. That's it. D&D is, I think, was it a tenth of that? It's 0.5%.
It was much lower than Magic.
Yeah.
The numbers that you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah. I mean, 0.5% is a rounding error on a spreadsheet. You know, that's nothing.
Yes.
It's nothing. And if I was the guys at Hasbro, I would look at that and go, why are we bothering with this?
It's interesting you mentioned that, too, because obviously I've told people many times I have not played D&D in a long, long time. Last time I played D&D, it was Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. So that's how far back I go. But always been in role-playing, big Chaosium fan, Call of Cthulhu, various different things as well. A lot of people who are Magic fans, more so people who are Dungeons & Dragons fans, get very upset at Hasbro. My beef with Hasbro is they're sitting on Avalon Hill, and there's loads of good stuff in there that we'll just unfortunately never see again. But a lot of people are very upset about Dungeons & Dragons doesn't get prime treatment from Hasbro, but in reality, it's not that big a thing on their radar.
No, exactly. 0.5%. Any game in my store that accounts for 0.5% of my sales doesn't get any of my attention. So why would it get Hasbro's attention, really?
It would be in your clearance bin.
The problem is our gaming is very personal to us. It's our hobby. It is something that we have invested part of our identity in. So when we see someone treating it either nonchalantly or not treating it well at all, we as gamers take that as a personal affront. It's an insult to us.
Yes.
It's hard not...
It's a personal insult.
Exactly. It's not to take that easy. It's not easy to take that just sitting down. So, you know, we get the torches and pitchforks out and climb the mountain or the molehill.
We ran a recent poll regarding the new upcoming edition of Dungeons & Dragons, asking people would they purchase it. And we had various different levels. One was, how many times does Wizards of the Coast want to get me for another edition of Dungeons & Dragons? Overall, less than 20% of our responders had a positive reaction to a new edition of Dungeons & Dragons. Now, you're a game store owner. You carry Pathfinder and D&D and no doubt probably Call of Cthulhu and Pinnacle Press and Cubicle 7. Sure, you carry all this stuff. And knowing that kind of number that we've seen, and I'm sure that's just a very, very small sample, what is the reaction that you've heard from some of your gamers? Are they excited that 4th edition is kind of going to go away? Because I know there were a lot of people upset about that. Or is it more nonchalant? So people are like, well, you know, maybe when it comes out, I'll actually start thinking about it.
I'm seeing a mix of reactions. You have some people that are like, oh my God, I can't wait. I hate 4th edition. It's the worst thing ever created. Then you got people, they've already moved on. They're playing Pathfinder, and they don't want anything different. These are a lot of people that started with like D&D 3.5. Pathfinder is familiar territory, and no matter what 5.0 does, they're happy with where they are. And if another thing gamers don't like, it's change. Gamers don't like change. We fear change. And Wizards of the Coast, they're treading on thin ice with this. They really are. Are they going to alienate their 4th edition crowd, which is what's kind of keeping them going as far as the role-playing market goes, going to a 5th edition, which is going to try to get people away from Pathfinder who are happy with the game over there? Are they just going to end up alienating everyone?
And that's a big possibility.
Yeah, it is. And I am cautiously hesitant on throwing any support or saying too much. I need to see the product when it comes out. They've got Monty Cook behind it. Mm-hmm. He has come up with some absolutely wonderful things in the past. Can lightning strike again? It's possible. It's happened. Is it likely? Probably not. But I need to see the product so that I can actually judge it on its merits and play it a few times. If it ends up being better than the games I'm playing, yeah, I'll be happy to throw my personal weight behind it. I'll still carry it no matter what I think. But I need to see the product. They're going to be doing open public beta testing. That's actually a massive step forward for Wizards of the Coast, being that open. It's looking like they might have learned a few things from what they've done with 4th edition. Let's see if they're actually walking the walk instead of just talking the talk.
Or blowing smoke.
Yeah, exactly. Gamers are usually fairly astute when someone's trying to blow smoke up their butt, to be honest. Really? And then we'll stand for it. It's, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. And they won't be fooled twice.
Along a similar vein, talking about Pathfinder, I have to really give it up to Paizo, because look at what they've done in 2.5 years, I believe it's been, about 2.5. They are matching Dungeons & Dragons sales-wise, from what I understand, across the board.
Even better than that. In my store, it's literally probably a 5-to-1
wow.
ratio of Pathfinder to D&D. We've got a very, very active play group for Pathfinder. Their organized play campaign hit the ground running. We've got tables of that going off all the time at my store. We've got excited people playing it, and I'm selling Dickens out of it over D&D.
Speaking of items that are really moving well, any particular titles, regardless if it's a board game, role-playing game, miniature series, what's really moving in your store?
Well, we move up Pathfinder, of course.
Right.
The Warhammer role-playing line of the 40K universe from Fantasy Flight Game moves very, very well for us. And it's actually gotten a bunch of my guys who aren't role players to role play. My late night 40K crowd, when they're done playing 40K, they whip out their 40K RPG books and they do some of that, which I think is absolutely wonderful.
Sure.
Some other things that have moved, there's actually one RPG that has been a complete shock to me that came out of left field. It's from a company called Uber Goober. The RPG is just called Steampunk. I've sold several copies of it.
We've reviewed it, actually.
It came out of left field. I got it in, set it down, and it sold. And I've been bringing in copies and they keep moving. So I'm really, really surprised about that one. Fiasco is another one that's moved very, very well for us. It's a very, very innovative game. As far as miniature games, we sell a lot of Games Workshop, War Machine, Flames of War. But we've also got a very active Malifaux crowd. We sell a lot of that. And Dystopian Wars moves very well for us as well.
I'm trying to delve a little deeper into Malifaux and Dystopian Wars. I'm a huge naval fan, and of course I know that Dystopian Wars is land and naval and things like that, but you can pick and choose what you want to play, really.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see some kind of steampunkish Victorian age naval game out there, that piques my interest.
Oh, it's really gorgeous. The ships are amazing. And the price point's actually fairly reasonable for the big chunks of resin that you're getting, and they paint up so well, too. I like it. My only complaint with the company is they have three games out, Firestorm Armada, Dystopian Wars, and Uncharted Seas. I only carry the one because from everything I've really seen, if you're carrying one, you're kind of carrying the others.
Yes.
There's not enough of a difference between the games to really distinguish themselves too much other than the theme of the game. Steampunk is the big thing right now, so that's the angle we went. My first proclivity would have been to do the spaceship game, but this is a perfect example of I can't let my personal biases interfere. I would rather see a spaceship game, but my customers really want the steampunk, so that's what they get.
One last question I would have. Being an individual owner of an independent store, you're in Glendale. I happen to be an East Valley guy. I have no idea how many people listen to us locally. I just know how many downloads we get.
Okay.
But I know that there are people locally who do listen to this show because I've had them tell me here.
Good.
What is it about your store itself in Glendale that you would feel would incent someone like myself who would have to drive an hour to get to the store, knowing that there's some stores closer to my area? What do you have going on over at Imperial Outpost that's a little bit different? That would really give me a boot in the rear end to head on over to Imperial Outpost and do some gaming.
I would say, number one, our selection. I have worked very, very diligently over the past couple of years to boost up our inventory levels and bring in an even wider variety of games than just about any store in the Valley that I've seen. And I will put my selection up against anyone's at this point in time.
You going to put it up against my bookshelves full of games? Are you willing to do that?
I said stores. I said no. I said, no way. No.
Just because I'm not one of these reviewers who likes to take photos in front of all my games so that proves I'm some sort of an expert, I do have all those bookshelves full of games.
Yeah.
I'm sure, of course.
I know exactly, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Huge bookcases. Yes. Someone's like, I've never even read this book. Why do I have it? But I can't think of myself getting rid of it, so.
Same way with books, too, yes.
The other thing we have, here's what separates us, and I think is good. My customers. I've got the greatest bunch of people that frequent my store that are helpful, they are encouraging, they are friendly, and they love gaming. They want to see other people gaming, and they're willing to sit down and take an hour to teach people how to paint, how to play a game. They'll run demos at the drop of a hat. I don't even need to pay these folks. I've got the greatest unpaid sales staff ever because we foster community, and we just want more people having fun. And I love it when someone comes in and says, oh, I mentioned Malifaux, and Tyler, just one of my customers, was like, oh, I'll run you a demo, and he excitedly hops up and throws down a demo game. You got to watch out for that. There's a double-edged sword in that, because
sure.
If the person's not doing a good job, you need to make...
I'm not buying this.
Yeah, exactly. Right? But I found, overall, it really helps, because then the customer's like, hey, this person doesn't even have a vested interest in this. He's not getting a sale out of it.
He owns stock in weird miniatures.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, but no, that's one of the things I think we have going for us, is our level of excitement and commitment to just having fun. Winning is secondary. Enjoying what you're doing, enjoying the company that you're with, is the most important thing.
My experience so far in the Valley has not always been a welcoming attitude to someone not necessarily even new to the hobby, and they just don't have any interest in anyone else joining their groups or even open gaming with them at their gaming stores. And that was one thing I found very interesting when I did visit Imperial Outpost, is everybody was, you want to have a seat and get in this game? And a couple of them I did, but most were like, well, no, I'm actually just trying to cover this,
yeah.
You know, this gaming event.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I don't understand that whole closed-minded mentality. Yeah, sometimes you will have a group come in, they're running a D&D game, and they've got a party set up. They can't be open to just every Tom, Dick, and Harry running in.
Right.
And that's understandable, but they do it in a respectful way when someone says, can I sit in? Well, this is actually a closed game right now.
Yeah, it's our campaign.
Yeah. But in general, getting more people into the hobby is what's going to keep this hobby around. The hobby is graying. If you look at the average age of people in this hobby, it's going up and up and up and up.
I'm a war gamer from way back, so I know all about the graying of the hobby. It's even more so in that niche.
Oh, yeah. And if we don't be proactive in encouraging people to not just get in the hobby, but to stay in the hobby. You come into a store and you get treated like dirt trying to get into a game, you're just going to go home and say, you know what, to hell with this hobby. I'm just going to go off and do something else.
Right.
No, that can't be. We have to fight. We have to fight hard to keep this hobby going. Especially in these economic times, it's a luxury item that a lot of people can't afford. They're going to be giving it up. We have to fight to keep people gaming. We have to be serious about our fun. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to do everything I can. And my customers, they get that attitude from me. We have to have people having fun. And they will do everything they can to help people have fun.
And on the flip side of that, too, I believe that there are quite a few publishers who need to start shaking the tree a little bit and get out of their comfort zone where everything they release is the same exact thing. It's just another expansion on top of an expansion on top of an expansion. Because as you mentioned, in this economic time that we have right now, gaming is a luxury. So why would I want to go? I've already got enough of a game. Why do I need to go and buy another expansion that's just going to be kind of more of the same?
Yeah, it's another double-edged sword. If a company has a product out that they know sells well, it's the safe bet to make an expansion for it rather than sinking a ton of money into things that might not work. That's one of the reasons I think Kickstarter is one of the greatest things to come along to the gaming industry since sliced bread.
I'm not a proponent of that. I think it has its good and its bad.
What I see it good for is I see a lot of companies or people that are using it to get away from digital publishing. Now, I'm okay with digital publishing. Lord knows I have enough ebooks. I'm pretty sure that the guys at DriveThruRPG bought his daughter a car on the money that I gave him.
Right.
However, I want to see physical books out there. And more of these companies are going ebook only, simply because of the initial cost of making a print run on a book.
Sure.
Kickstarter is helping people get over this. And I think we're seeing some books that are coming out that never would have seen physical print had it not been for a project like that. And if that's what it's taking, then I'm good for it.
People have a misunderstanding. I'm really against Kickstarter. I'm certainly not, because there is a lot of good stuff out there that without Kickstarter, no one would ever have known about, never seen print, publication, whatever. But are there any last words that you would like to share with our listeners?
First off, I'd like to thank you, Jeff, for giving me the opportunity to come in here and talk. For those people who are in the Arizona area, please come by and give my store a shot. We would love to have you in, and even if it's just to look around a little bit, please do. We've made a lot of changes to the store in the past couple of years. My folks that might have been up there 5 or 6 years ago, I don't think you'll recognize us if you come in. We've done a lot of changes. It's Imperial Outpost 2.0.
You had even mentioned that just in a few months since my last visit, there's been a lot of changes as well.
Mostly just in inventory levels. We've brought in a lot of new product, and the walls are even bursting more with product, to the point where I get orders in right now, I have to sit and just figure out where I'm going to put stuff.
And that's a good thing.
It is, which really is. If you don't have it on the shelves, you can't sell it. And in the poor economic times, some stores will have the tendency to cut down things down to the bare minimum. I see this as the opportunity to grow, to reinvest into the store, and to make it even bigger than it was before, so that when times bounce back, I'm ready to pounce on that.
Darren Johnson, thank you very much for taking some time out here at Volcon to share your thoughts.
Again, my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
There you have it. Once again, a big thanks to Darren Johnson of Imperial Outpost Games for taking time out to join me. Stay tuned for more coverage of Volcon 2012, and don't forget to catch our weekday news show, The Daily Dope, and join Elliot and I for our next regularly scheduled episode of The Gaming Gang.